The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
The Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Broadcasting from Resistance Headquarters,
relentlessly fighting back against the clown dictator and his regime of deplorables.
Never give up, never surrender.
This is The Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
From our nation's capital, it is Wednesday, November 14, 2018, and this is the Bob Seska Show, interviews from Earth One. My guest today is the great Jackie Schechner from InvestigateRussia.org and the Stephanie Miller Show. Given the outcome of the midterms and the firing of Jeff Sessions, I thought it'd be a good time for a deep dive into the status of the Russia investigation with a bona fide Trump-Russia expert, huh? By the way, if you like what you hear, please consider supporting the podcast by subscribing to our Patreon page, patreon.com/join/Bob Seska Show, or just click the link in the description below. And now let's catch up with Jackie Schechner. You know, I had a very brief argument, Jackie, with Michael Steele.
Oh, really?
It was the night of the election, the night of the midterm election. Michael Steele seems to think, and this, I'm glad this kind of thing went away after the election, but Michael Steele and Brian Williams were both saying, oh, the Democrats would be crazy if they start going after Trump for all of these things, and it's just nothing but investigations and all these committees going after them, and they're just going to be playing on Trump's level if they do that. And then I took them both to task on Twitter, of course, and then Michael Steele responded to me and said, okay, go ahead, be stupid. I was like, what are you talking about? It's not like Adam Schiff is suddenly going to Hulk out and start acting like Donald Trump on his Twitter feed and all that shit. And you know, it's one of those things where obviously the Democrats are going to take this in a professional way, and they're not going to be maniacs like Trey Gowdy was, or all of the ongoing investigations during
Devin
the Obama
Nunes
years.
Or Jim Jordan or any of those guys.
Exactly, sure. Right. So, I mean, where do you land on that? Obviously, I get the sense that you're in full support of intense investigations at the committee level.
Yeah, go after it. There's plenty to investigate. I don't have any problem with that whatsoever. I think that the Democrats now have control of the House, or they will come January. They have the opportunity to issue subpoenas. There's plenty of opportunity to keep this president in check, to investigate the things that deserve investigation. And I don't think that this is the time to take the high road and say we're not going to look into it. I don't think that people elected Democrats to be weak.
No.
And I think that anyone advising the Democrats not to go full force doesn't have the country's best interest at heart, frankly. I don't think that you fight this Republican Party, this Trump led Republican Party, by being nice.
Yeah.
I don't think that sitting back is what people elected you to do. Mm-hmm. And so do I think that you need to go straight to impeachment? No. I mean, do I think that he deserves to be impeached? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I don't think you have to go there. I think what you do is you investigate all of the things that haven't been investigated in the past 2 years that should have been. And if other people other than the electorate decide that that's not the way to go, pundits or media advisors or former RNC chairman think that that's not the way to go, I would look for advice elsewhere. I just believe that people are fed up, and that's what they elected Democrats to do, to get after it.
Yeah, I mean, it would be absolutely a ridiculous thing if the Democrats suddenly were sworn in January and decided, hey, you know what, we're not going to pursue Russia. We're not going to pursue any of these things that Trump has been doing. And by the way, in the process, they'll be saying, oh, yeah, everything Trump's been doing, totally fine. Totally fine. Just because there are a bunch of professional scolds who think that pursuing Trump is somehow unserious, right?
It's okay to multitask. You can work on healthcare reform. You can work on minimum wage. You can work on immigration reform. Yep. You can work on all of these issues while also pursuing an investigation into the way this president consistently breaks the law.
Mm-hmm.
There's no rule that says you can't multitask.
Yep.
And I just think that after 2 years of watching Devin Nunes attempt to burn the House down and watching Mark Meadows and Matt Gaetz and Jim Jordan and all of these crazy people try to investigate the investigators and attack law enforcement, federal law enforcement and the Department of Justice, I think that Democrats need to bring it back, not to civility in terms of playing nice,
yeah,
but bringing it back to normalcy where the investigations are about what they need to be. Let's investigate how Russia interfered in our 2016 election and continues to attack us on a regular basis, and not go into the depths of the inner workings of the Department of Justice and fabricating some sort of conspiracy that doesn't exist.
How psyched are you that with the prospect of Adam Schiff and Jerry Nadler and Maxine Waters and all of these incoming chair people coming in and starting these investigations? I mean, just the very idea of these open hearings happening live on television seemed just like impossibly unrealistic to me. I'm just like, oh my God.
That's, I have no plans to leave the house.
That's really going to happen? They're really going to have televised hearings?
I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do and to what extent they'll do it, but I am totally convinced that Representative Waters and Nadler and Cummings and Schiff are all going to follow through on their plans. I look at men like Representative Swalwell or Ted Lieu, who have been outspoken and supportive. And I think that these are the men and women who are going to lead the charge. I don't know how much will come of it in terms of what will be televised and who will show. I do wonder about what cooperation we'll get from the people who will end up being called to testify. But I am confident that they will follow through on the promises they've made to try to find out what's been going on and to hold people accountable.
Yeah. Well, you're exactly right. I mean, we're going to be glued to our television. I mean, it seems almost like a fantasy that it would actually happen to me. And it's actually happening. It seems so. I mean, after two years,
jinx it.
I know, but Jesus, after 2 years of getting just utterly screwed left and right by Devin Nunes and his shenanigans and all these closed door hearings where all these guys, Donald Trump Jr., getting easy treatment by having a closed door hearing. I mean, I want to see Donald Trump Jr. especially dragged before the House Intelligence Committee and interrogated for 11 straight hours. I want to see him try to plead the fifth on every question. I want to watch this actually occur live on television, where suddenly the world gets to see what we've all been observing through news accounts and so on, finally live happening on television, that this guy and all the people around him are lying rat bastards. They're criminals, they're traitors, and they're finally getting exposed for who they are. It's just so tantalizing and exciting. It's almost like I'm not even thinking about the holidays. I'm like, the holidays for me are starting in January. That's when
the holidays are just a distraction before we get Democrats in charge of the House. Yeah, that was Christmas come early for us.
Yeah.
I wonder about what will happen in the next 2 months. Mm-hmm. The appointment of Matthew Whitaker is not a good thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I do have my concerns about what kind of damage can be done between now and January. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I have real confidence in Robert Mueller. And Rod Rosenstein seems to be playing an interesting game.
Yeah.
And so we'll see where this all ends up landing. But I'm not totally convinced that we're out of the woods yet, just because there's a lot of damage that can be done in the next 2 months.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And in fact, Mitch McConnell has pledged a few days ago not to support any legislation protecting Mueller. I mean,
that I don't understand. And I have a real problem with this, is that it's just contingency. It doesn't say that the president's going to do anything. It doesn't mean that you don't trust the president. It's just, we believe in this investigation enough to put some legislation in place to protect it just in case. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand why Mitch McConnell wouldn't be willing to bring that bipartisan-supported legislation, bipartisan-sponsored legislation to the floor, put it up for a vote, get it through, and then everybody feels a little bit better.
Yeah.
And McConnell's not willing to do that. You got to question why that is. It doesn't enact anything other than a contingency plan, and I can't see where having that protection in place is problematic unless you've got some nefarious purpose waiting in the wing.
Yeah, speaking of that, I mean, should we assume that McConnell is either complicit in the Russian attack or at least complicit after the fact? I mean, is that a fair...
Something's there. I mean, you got to imagine. I mean, his wife is part of the administration. Mm-hmm. There are serious questions as to who is caught up in this. Grassley seems... It's tough to tell where Grassley's role in it. Graham, by all means, seems to be compromised recently, the way that he's changed his tune. I don't know to what extent some of it is just general obstructionism and to what extent is I'm compromised.
Yeah.
I think we'll find out. But I wouldn't doubt that there are members of GOP leadership who have their fingers in the Russian pot or are somehow being compromised by Russian information.
Yeah, Len Blavatnik, for example, has funded all kinds of Republican campaigns. I think Mitch McConnell's PAC got something like $5 million from Blavatnik. And,
I mean, there are Russian oligarchs who have been funneling money. There are American or Russian-born businessmen who have been funneling tremendous amounts of money. This is all part of the Mueller investigation, and this is why I say to people, if you like a good mystery, you should be following along, because the twists and turns in this are fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
There's often times where I put a story up on the website on investigaterussia.org where I have to go back and do our search. I'm very lucky that we have a really good comprehensive search function, and I go back and do a search on a name, and I say, okay, that's how that person is involved, and I can link back to it, and it helps you understand how all of these components are intertwined.
Yeah.
This isn't just Mueller taking a look at a meeting at Trump Tower. This is Mueller investigating everything from Roger Stone's involvement to Eric Prince going to the Seychelles to the Russian oligarchs who have ties to both Vladimir Putin and Paul Manafort.
Yep.
I think that you need to take this in its entirety and realize what a huge investigative undertaking this is, and that's why it's taking so long. I think when it's all said and done, we're going to be amazed at how quickly Mueller wrapped this all up because there are so many tentacles to it.
Have you heard anything behind the scenes with regard to how the Democrats might approach something like a Protect Mueller piece of legislation, maybe sticking an amendment into a funding bill?
Has been some discussion about adding something into a larger funding bill, the same way the president wants to try to jam funding for the wall into there. I wonder what happened to the whole Mexico's paying for the wall thing, by the way.
I know.
How's that going?
No.
But there is some discussion of that. I don't know how legitimate that is. I haven't dug into the specifics of it, and I probably should do a little more reading on it. But that is something that has been up for conversation, is maybe tying Mueller protection into a funding bill. Nobody wants to hold up the government. Nobody wants to shut down the government.
Right.
I don't know how far that will get, because it would probably be a sticking point of some sort. But I don't have any problem with the Democrats playing hardball. I think that if the Republicans are going to do it over this stupid wall, then Democrats are more than willing or more than justified in trying to get protection for the special counsel in there as well.
I mean, it seems ridiculous. I mean, what harm would it do? I mean, I just keep thinking that there's no explanation for why they would refuse to pass a, you know, all it would take is a few lines in a piece of legislation to protect Robert Mueller and the special counsel's office. And the clear, obvious reaction to this is they don't want to protect Mueller. They would prefer it if Mueller would just quietly go away. That just seems like the logical response to this kind of behavior from Mitch McConnell and the other Republicans. It's the same. You know, we can make this segue over into a discussion of Whitaker, too. Like, it's so obvious that you almost feel like this is part of the gaslighting, that we're feeling like we're going crazy because it's so clear to anyone with a brain in their heads, right?
Yeah, I mean, the Whitaker appointment is absurd. And so much information is coming out now about what a scam artist he is, how he was involved in this shady patent company, how he... There was another article that was just out late last night about how he just walked away from a project, a redevelopment project in Iowa that was over budget and floundering.
Yeah.
And he just walked away from it. He had a government loan to conduct some of this work, or a state loan, I think it was, to conduct some of this work. And it was in such bad shape that he just walked away. I mean, this is a guy who's right up Donald Trump's alley.
Yeah.
This is a guy who, I mean, it might as well be Trump University and any number of projects where Trump stiffed his contractors.
Yeah.
So this is the kind of guy that Trump likes. It's a sycophantic guy who's been auditioning for Jeff Sessions' job from the very beginning. And the fact that Trump appointed him is no surprise. The fact that there's more and more information coming out about what a shady character he is no surprise. You can't look at this with any sort of logic and not totally understand that this is an effort to shut down the Mueller investigation.
Yeah.
I mean, the man literally went on cable television and talked about how he could shut down the Mueller investigation.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote an op-ed about how you can shut down the Mueller investigation. He's not qualified in any capacity to take this position above Rod Rosenstein, other
right.
than the fact that he has been vocal about shutting down the Mueller investigation.
Mm-hmm.
So I know it seems too obvious to be true, but we need to stop looking for any sort of complicated ulterior motive. The motive is right out there in the open.
Oh,
Trump's
yeah.
just not that sophisticated.
That's right. And there hasn't been any explanation from the White House why they've taken this end around with Rod Rosenstein, where by
Nothing.
Rights, Rod Rosenstein should be up to acting attorney general. And then who is it? I want to say Don Francisco. Is that his name?
Noel Francisco.
Noel Francisco, yes. And yeah. then Noel Francisco would take over as deputy until Trump has appointed someone new, which can case there, I assume the hearings would begin in January. I can't imagine the Senate confirming a new attorney general before the break, because I think there's only like 19 days in session between the midterms and the holidays. So, I mean, obviously, this is something that would have been quite simple and would have generated zero controversy, other than for the fact that Donald Trump wants to completely flummox the Mueller investigation. And that's why.
I mean,
that's why
look,
we have-
it only goes so far as looking at Trump saying, I don't know, Matthew Whitaker, and
yeah.
then juxtaposing that with the remark where he says, I know Matt Whitaker.
I know
Matt
Whitaker's
a great guy. You either do or you don't. And
right.
we all know you do, because he's been in the Oval Office in lieu of Jeff Sessions dozens of times. So it's so obvious. It's stupid. And anybody who's looking for any other explanation is giving the president way too much credit.
Yeah. Well, that's,
it is exactly what you think it is. It's as mm-hmm. bad as you think it is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no doubt. I mean, again, Captain Obvious. This is, I mean,
yeah.
it couldn't be more clear. And to say that right. it's anything else is just an absolute 100% lie. But, I mean, fortunately, I mean, in addition to winning back the House, which I think was a just such a weight, I think, off of all of our shoulders, that we at
yes.
least now
it's
have
helpful.
some power and a voice in how...
Yes.
Governing works in the Trump years. But on top of that, even before the midterms, we had all of these pockets where there were judges and there were inspectors general, and then there were ethics people that were rising up and putting a stop to some of the things that Trump was trying and some of the conspiracy theories that he was throwing out there. And now we learn that Maryland, the state of Maryland, has now sued the Trump administration over Whitaker. And I can imagine that a bunch of other states are going to join in too, and also sue over this. What's your read, though, on how the law regards this temporary department level appointment, where there's a lot of controversy over a law that was passed regarding appointments along these lines, and then there's I think it's section 508 of the U.S. code, and they say conflicting things, whereas the new law said that the president can do this, but section 508 of the U.S. code says the president can't do this. And meanwhile, like, as a complete wild card, Clarence Thomas, for example, this goes to the Supreme Court, Clarence Thomas would probably rule against the administration on the appointment of Whitaker. Where are we with the actual legality of what Trump has done here?
Yeah, I think the simpler way to look at this, because I've been trying to break it down in a simple way that it's easy to understand, because it can get complicated with
yes.
all of the components to it, is that, so Maryland has a lawsuit against Jeff Sessions that has to do with the Affordable Care Act.
Mm-hmm.
And the state of Maryland is saying that the Department of Justice has to institute the Affordable Care Act as written by law.
Yeah.
Because it has the outstanding lawsuit against Jeff Sessions, the state of Maryland has the standing to ask for an injunction against Matthew Whitaker, claiming that because his appointment isn't constitutional, he can't be the defendant in that lawsuit.
Mm.
And that any judgment that's made wouldn't hold because he's not a legitimate acting attorney general. They
right.
want the federal court to replace, they want a judge to replace Whitaker with Rosenstein, because Rosenstein, by all accounts, should be the acting attorney general.
Yeah, this is amazing. They want Whitaker removed, but they're specific about having Rosenstein be upped to acting AG.
Well, he would be the next in line
right.
because he's the deputy AG. And so they're saying that by the constitutionality of it, it should be Rosenstein. And that any argument that they have against Whitaker, whatever the ruling was, wouldn't stand anyway because Whitaker's illegitimate. Mm-hmm. So they would go through the motions to argue this case with somebody who doesn't have the authority to act as the defendant in the case. That's the argument that Maryland has.
Interesting.
I don't think the judge has ruled on that yet. Now, today, the Department of Justice, the Office of Legal Counsel at the Department of Justice, put out a 20-page memo arguing that the president has every right to put Whitaker in place, saying that he has the qualifications to be a temporary stand-in because he's been in the Department of Justice for the requisite amount of time at the salary level that you need to be, the senior level that you need to be in order to be a suitable replacement.
Yeah.
And so they're saying that because it's temporary and because of the Vacancies Act, that he has the right, the president has the right to have Matthew Whitaker in place. But there's another component of this, and this is what was argued in the op-ed by Kellyanne Conway's husband and another lawyer who wrote the op-ed alongside George Conway.
Yes, Neil Katyal, I think is his name. God bless you for trying. I really did. I desperately tried to pronounce that. K-A-T-Y-A-L.
It was a very compelling argument. This is the one I think that mentioned Clarence Thomas that you were talking about, is that because the only person overseeing Whitaker, he's in such a senior position as the acting attorney general, the only person overseeing him is Trump. Mm-hmm. And that he's too senior a position to not have gone through Senate confirmation, even in a temporary capacity.
Yeah.
We're not talking about him being out in a couple of days and he's just a stand-in. The president has talked about putting him in charge of the Russia investigation, and he can be there up until 217, I don't remember what the number was, but more than 200 days that he can be in that position, which would give him significant oversight over the Russia investigation.
Yeah.
So the argument that they made is that he's too senior, he's a principal, he's too senior a position to be standing in without Senate confirmation. And it sounds to me, based on the argument that they make and the legality and constitutionality of it, that they have the right argument. That if he were a lower level position, and the president, this is fascinating too, is the president likes to argue, well, Robert Mueller wasn't Senate confirmed, although he was obviously Senate confirmed to be the head of the FBI, that he wasn't confirmed in the position of special counsel. But the counter to that is that he has oversight.
Yeah.
That Rod Rosenstein is his superior. And so Rosenstein has the opportunity to tell Mueller what he can and can't do.
Mm-hmm.
The only person with any sort of can and can't do over Whitaker would be Trump, and that's not enough because there is no Senate confirmation. Rosenstein is Senate confirmed, and he has the authority over Mueller.
Right.
So therein lies the broken chain of command, and that you could, I mean, I could pick you, Bob, and put you in the position had you been working in the Department of Justice for however long it was. I think it's a certain amount of time, and you were making the same amount of salary, but you haven't been Senate confirmed. And the only person who has control over you is Trump. Like, that doesn't make it okay. And so there's no checks and balances. There's no balance of power here. You're talking about an autocratic installation and a real lean towards demagoguery when you have the president of the United States pick someone to head up the Department of Justice. Mm-hmm. I mean, where's the co-equal branches of government when it's all controlled by the executive branch?
Right. Yeah, and on top of that, I mean, has a special prosecutor ever had to be Senate confirmed at any point ever? I mean,
not that I know of, no. But the most, I mean, it's possible. I haven't done that research. But the most important part of it is that he's accountable.
Right.
The special counsel doesn't operate on his own. There was an order, Rod Rosenstein put an order in place that said, here's your mandate. Here's what you can and can't do. Here are the parameters. And everything that Mueller does has to get overseen it by Rosenstein.
Yeah.
So Mueller isn't acting without any sort of control or oversight or authority. That he's got limitations.
Mm-hmm.
Whitaker, on the other hand, has free rein.
Yep. And in fact, all he needs, I mean, you mentioned the number of days, 207 days. He really only needed.
Is that what it is? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's somewhere in that range.
I know it's over 200 and there's a 7 in there somewhere. I just don't know what it is.
Well, it's close enough.
7, but 17, I mean, 71, something like that.
Oh, exactly. But the point is that all Whitaker needed was 200 minutes to be able to flummox everything that Trump wants him to flummox. And I'm absolutely convinced that that's the case. And I think at the very least, we're going to get to a point where sometime early to mid January, Matt Whitaker is going to be sitting before Adam Schiff and the House Intelligence Committee, if not also Jerry Nadler and the House Judiciary Committee, explaining what his conversations were with Donald Trump, whether or not Donald Trump asked him to not recuse himself, mm-hmm. asked him to defund the Mueller investigation, which is one of the things that Matt Whitaker has talked about publicly on television.
He can also just starve it of resources.
Oh, yeah.
He not only can he defund it, he can take away any kind of resources he wants. He can take away personnel. He can reassign pen, paper, and computers. I mean, he can do, as the head of the Department of Justice, you know, he can leave Mueller alone in the room with a notepad. You know,
Jesus.
He can take anything away that he wants, right, if he's in charge of the Russia investigation. So he can starve it and choke it to death. And there's no recourse. Mueller's got no recourse. Now, what I think, if I had to take an educated guess, Mueller's an incredibly smart man.
Yeah.
And everything that he has been given to somebody else, has been checked and double-checked. It's hidden away in a safe. I use this metaphorically. But I don't think that this investigation dies with Mueller. I think that, you know, should Whitaker do something stupid, like try to starve the investigation or fire Robert Mueller, that all of the work that he's done will survive him in various ways. And I think that the idea that the House could drag Mueller in front of it and have him testify as to what he found is another workaround.
Yeah.
That they can say to Mueller, okay, your report got buried. You tell us under oath what it is you discovered. And that way, the information makes it out into the public.
Mm-hmm. And my concern, and I know we do this, and we've all played this this game online, where we do the Chuck Norris game with Robert Mueller, where Robert Mueller is this 8 foot tall strong man who can do anything. He can bend spoons mentally. He can he can snap chains like Superman and so on. That he's this superhero that's invincible. But I mean, my concern is that maybe Mueller's discipline will actually come into play here, and that if the whole thing is dragged out from under him, that Mueller is just going to walk away and say, you know what, I don't want to disrupt this process any more than it has been. I'm out. And I'm afraid of that possibility, that is going to be his reaction, rather than kind of what you discussed, which is more or less a suicide switch, where if Mueller is defunded, suddenly he's fired or something terrible happens, that Mueller is just going to issue what he has as far as his evidence, as far as his list of incoming subpoenas, his list of pending indictments and so on, and certainly his report, that he's just going to hand this over, as Malcolm Nance likes to predict, hand it over to the Washington Post and the New York Times, and then I've added another copy goes to Adam Schiff's office. So I'm wondering if which way it's going to swing, or maybe somewhere in between. I don't know how Mueller is. I we've been so screwed one time after another by this Republican Congress.
Sure, you're jaded and burned. I get it. You know, there's an article that Garrett Graff wrote about Robert Mueller. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've read it. It was in Wired.
No, I haven't seen it.
I can share it with you, and I'll share it on Twitter as well. It's spectacular. It was written a while ago, and it's about who Robert Mueller is, about his military service, about who he fundamentally is as a person. Mm-hmm. And I think that after reading that, it gave me a tremendous amount of confidence. He's the anti-Trump, right? Yeah. And it gave me a tremendous amount of confidence in Robert Mueller and how he feels about serving this country. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is probably his last big job. He's not a young guy.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's going to go out leaving this country in turmoil. I think that he's been tasked with something enormous. I think he feels like this is his mission to get to the bottom of it. I think he feels if he has an opportunity to save our democracy, he will do it. Mm-hmm. I don't see him as somebody who would back away from a fight or stand on principle or not want to rock the boat.
Yeah.
I think that this country is too important to him. And I look at men like James Clapper and John Brennan and General Michael Hayden and Mike Morrell and the guys on our board who have been willing to stand up all along and speak out against what's going on to destroy our democracy and say Mueller is that and then some.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that the men were willing to put their voices and their seniority on the line to speak out against what's happening exemplify what Mueller brings to the table as well.
Yeah.
And so that gives me confidence that he will fight to the death to make sure that he protects our democracy, that it's too important to let it slide, to keep things calm. I don't think that he sees that as the end game. I don't think the norms and the formalities are his end game. I think his end game is to save this country, and he'll go down as a hero, and he's already been heralded as a hero. So this is an area in which he is comfortable being the guy who does what other guys can't do.
Sure. And you know, going back to Whitaker, is there, and I'm very unclear in terms of process on this, so maybe you can enlighten us. Is it possible for Whitaker to interfere with a pending grand jury indictment? I mean, if grand jury is getting ready to indict, and we're going to talk about here in a second, Jerome Corsi, we're going to talk about Roger Stone, and some of these pending indictments that we've been hearing about rumors of this week. Is it possible for the acting AG to slip in and go, wait, grand jury, you can't indict these people. I'm not allowing it. I'm not signing off on any of this. Is that even a thing?
I think he has the authority to quash or at least to keep sealed indictments sealed. I don't know, and I wouldn't hold me to it, and I think we should ask a legal expert on that.
Yeah.
But I think that the attorney general has the right to keep sealed indictments sealed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's next. Obviously, Jerome Corsi thinks that he's going to be indicted. I think it's pretty obvious Roger Stone is up there.
Yeah.
I think it's awfully curious. We haven't heard a heck of a lot about Donald Trump Jr., who said he suspects that Mueller may bring him in on something. I don't think Jared Kushner's necessarily out of the woods on any of this.
Yeah.
And I think it's been awfully quiet on the Eric Prince front. there are so many components of this and so many people who got their hands dirty in this mess that I wouldn't be surprised if there was a rumor going around that there was a tremendous amount of sealed indictments just waiting in the wings.
Wow.
And I wouldn't be surprised if that were in fact the case. But I don't know when the timing is right to unseal those. And I don't know what kind of authority Whitaker has to keep those under wraps. I suspect he probably has some. And that's part of it, too, as to why Donald Trump would want him in place, because he has authority to make those calls.
Yeah. And it just seems to me on the surface that it is kind of a separation of power thing, too, that we might end up seeing here with Whitaker and the grand jury. Because isn't the grand jury an Article 3 thing? And Whitaker is Article 2, obviously, as the Attorney General under Donald Trump. So it seemed to me as if there would be a separation of powers problem if Matt Whitaker tried to interfere with something the grand jury was doing, or if something has already gone to court. I guess it's possible that he could say, you know what, we're not going to prosecute this anymore, pull the plug. But it would just seem so. I mean, it would just seem like every single, Adam Schiff, Jerry Nadler, every single Democrat in the House of Representatives, their heads would explode if that were to happen. And of course, it would look obvious to everyone looking in that this is Donald Trump trying to kill the Mueller investigation. Do you think he's capable of being that excruciatingly obvious?
He has so far. And he hasn't seen any check from the Republicans in Congress. I mean, at least we have the House.
Yeah.
But in the Senate, you've got so many complicit Republicans who are willing to let him get away with anything he wants. So I don't have any faith that anybody, any Republican at any level is going to stand up and do the right thing. I mean, the only person who ever says anything is Flake. And frankly, he just says a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
So, and Corker's the same way. I mean, these guys love to just spew platitudes, but none of them is willing to stand up and do anything. Susan Collins is another one. I mean, after that whole Kavanaugh debacle, I've got zero faith in her. So I think that we need to count on what little ability the House will have should that come to pass. We need the Democrats in the Senate to stand strong. And I think that we need to keep a close eye on leadership in the Senate as well, and see if we can get any of them to grow a conscience somewhere between now and when this may happen. And sure. I just don't have faith that'll take place. You know, Senator Feinstein sent a letter to Grassley yesterday saying that she wanted to call in both Whitaker and Sessions for hearings, public hearings in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee, or I don't even know public, but hearings in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee, that she wants to know about not only Sessions, why Sessions resigned and the motivation behind that, but a bunch of unanswered questions she has about the Russia investigation in general, things that Sessions has never definitively answered. And then, of course, she wants to talk to Whitaker about conversations he had with the president.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Grassley, because he has power, has to approve that. Mm. And so, you know, kudos to Senator Feinstein for putting out these letters publicly and saying, I've asked for it. And Grassley right now is dragging his feet, and he's not entirely sure whether or not he's going to approve of this. But that's the kind of fortitude we need. You know, we need senior members of the Senate, Democrats, to put pressure on the Republican colleagues to do the right thing and to find some answers.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got to keep that pressure on. We're not just going to go along to get along at this point. Too much is at stake.
Have you heard anything about SDNY as it relates to Matt Whitaker? Because, I mean, my fear, one of my many fears, I'm just loaded with fears. Even after the even after the election, I still have all of my fears and phobias that these things are going to happen.
I stress ate my way through the election.
I mean, my big concern.
There's a lot of Halloween chocolate that got devoured on election day.
That's exactly right.
I don't even really like chocolate that much.
And so, I mean, my concern is that while we're all worried about Mueller and we're all looking to protect Mueller, especially the Democrats in the House, that Whitaker suddenly does something to flummox the SDNY investigation involving Michael Cohen. And obviously then extending to Donald Trump as well. And from everything we've been hearing from inside the White House, that's the investigation that the White House is most concerned about. It's not so much Mueller anymore. It's like, well, I mean, Mueller's certainly important and dangerous to them. But when it comes to the White House's criminality at this point, certainly Trump's criminality, SDNY has got to be a big thorn in their side. And it seems to me as if they're going to use the shell game to pull the plug on that one before they'd pull the plug on Mueller. What do you think about that?
I think if they have the authority to do it, they're going to try to pull everything they possibly can.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the Southern District of New York stuff is frightening to them because of Michael Cohen and because of the Trump Organization. There's so much shady stuff that the Trump Charitable Foundation, whatever that was, right? There's so much stuff they're looking into on that front. And I think that Mueller did the right thing by handing off that information so that they could pursue it separately.
Yeah.
But I think whatever Trump can do via Whitaker to pull the plug on any of these investigations is exactly what he's going to do. I think your fears are totally founded, and I think that's why the challenge to Whitaker in this position is so important right now. I mean, look, I don't have a tremendous amount of faith in Rosenstein, but I don't think that he is so loyal to the president that he's willing to break the law.
Yeah.
And I just think the opposite is true. I think Whitaker is one of these liars and grifters that the Trump administration attracts. I think he was gunning for Sessions' job as he was acting as his attorney general. Sessions, I saw an article where Sessions was like, it was too late before he noticed. I'm like, really, dude? Like, these people are all dumber than you even think they are.
That's true.
It was like we all could have seen that coming. And you're sending the guy to meetings instead of you, and the president likes him. I mean, he's everything that Sessions isn't. He's like that central casting thing that Trump really likes. I mean, if you haven't figured that out by now, like, he picks people based on their height or what they look like.
Whitaker is a great example of that.
Yeah, I mean, he's not necessarily a good-looking guy, but he's a big guy.
Yeah.
Trump likes big guys.
He's a macho guy.
Exactly. Yeah. The president ever hasn't been overcompensating for
that's
something.
That's right. Well, I'm assuming that Donald Trump wishes he looked like Matt Whitaker. That is generally a solid observation to
Except
make.
Except he wishes he had hair. Yeah, that's
right.
Like Whitaker with hair would be Trump's ideal, physical ideal.
How is it possible for the House of Representatives, and again, I'm rusty on the process here, but is it possible for the House
I
of
Representatives... I love that you ask me, assuming that I know. Go ahead.
Well, it's something we've talked about since, I think, Mueller was first appointed, which is that, is it possible for the House of Representatives, if Mueller is fired, to actually rehire Mueller as a special prosecutor working for the House of Representatives, basically just bringing his entire shop over to the House and working from there?
That's a good question. I don't know if that's the case. I mean, the legislation that they're trying to pass that would protect him would basically say that he would have the opportunity to appeal any decision to let him go.
Mm-hmm.
And there were two versions of that he could stay on the job until there was any sort of review of the process, or that he would have the right to appeal should he be displaced or replaced, the attempt to replace him. So all of the legislation would protect him on that front. I don't know if there is any provision in the law that would allow them to hire him, but I certainly can't imagine there's anyone who would object to that,
right,
who cares about finding out the truth about our democracy. One of the things that we haven't talked about, which I think is really super important, is that the House of Representatives will have the opportunity to look into Trump's financials, and not just his tax returns, but to go back and look at the potential money laundering.
Oh, yeah.
And to subpoena those sorts of financial records. And I think that that's a big key to much of this, right, is the money laundering that dates back decades and how Trump's been entwined with Russian mafia figures and the Russian oligarchy and how he got these convenient influxes of cash and these lines of credit from Deutsche Bank when nobody else would lend to him. I mean, if you follow the money and then some, and then plus the NRA involvement, I mean, it's all of the financials is something that the House will be able to go after. And that's the part of the investigation, not just the emoluments, you know, not just benefiting himself now, but all of the financial dealings that were done in years and decades past. And to me, that's where the key to much of this lies. Mueller already has it, but I think the House being able to look into that would help forward the investigation on that front. And I think that that's something that Democrats have been chomping at the bit to get to and haven't been able to.
Yeah.
So now having control of the House will give them the opportunity to get deeper into that aspect of the investigation. And I think that that will lead them where they need to go to find out what's really going on.
You know, and I was thinking way, way down the road the other day, and it occurred to me that if the House of Representatives actually passes articles of impeachment through the full House, that the Senate would have to. They would have no choice constitutionally but to take up the trial of Donald Trump in an impeachment setting. And it seems to me as if what would probably occur if Mitch McConnell is still the majority leader in the Senate, that Mitch McConnell would actually flummox that process, that Mitch McConnell wouldn't do that. He would pull a Merrick Garland, most likely, and wouldn't take
He's got to get 2/3 of the Senate, right?
That's true.
Follow through on impeachment, and if the Republicans hold out, then Trump's fine.
Well, no.
And I think that's why he wanted to hold the Senate so badly, even if they get the articles of impeachment through the House, he would be exonerated in the Senate.
Oh, yeah, certainly. He wouldn't be convicted. There aren't the votes to convict right. Donald Trump. However, they would still have to go through the trial. Wouldn't they? They'd still have to get John Roberts in to be the judge in a trial of Donald Trump in front of the whole Senate. And even if it didn't pass sort of the way Bill Clinton's impeachment trial didn't lead to a conviction, it seemed to me as if the very fact that the Republicans in the Senate would have to take up an impeachment trial of Donald Trump.
That they might try to postpone it.
Yeah, that they would just say, yeah, exactly. That they would say, well, we're not going to, it's an election year. We're not going to do this.
And maybe.
Come up with some excuse.
Who knows? I mean, I don't think that we anticipated any of these maneuverings before they actually happened.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, anything's possible. There's no morality there anymore. There's no ethics there anymore. So I wouldn't put anything past them. And I think that we have to think 6 steps ahead and consider, it's like a choose your own adventure book, right? Like, you got to consider what the possibilities are, and you got to be prepared for all of them. And so at this point, I don't know that any of the norms apply. Yeah. I think you have to imagine the worst case scenario and then imagine it's even worse than that and then plan for that contingency. And that's where we are at this point. It's really, truly unprecedented and unlike anything we've ever seen before. And I do believe that when we find out what happened with Russia, how guilty Trump is and what kind of help his campaign took and how he would not have been president if it weren't not for the Russian money and the Russian assistance, I think people are going to be shocked who haven't been paying attention, and those who have been paying attention are going to say, I told you so. And I really, truly believe that based on the fact that I live and breathe and eat and sleep this stuff. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I never have been. I've always been a journalist. I've always operated on the facts. But you can't read the information that's out there, and I'm not talking about conspiracy information. There are certain people who like to peddle in that, and I don't read those people. I'm talking about just the basic information that's out there and what we know about the players involved and their histories and who they are fundamentally and what they're willing to do. And I don't think that these people thought there was anything wrong with taking help from Russia, because a win's a win.
Yeah.
And that's how they operate. These are businessmen who operate with international partnerships. And I don't think that the political process to them was any different.
Yeah. And you know what? I think those of us who've been following this in, as Rachel Maddow likes to say, in granular detail, I think those of us who have been doing that are going to be shocked by what comes out of the Mueller report, especially in terms of the extent of this, because we've only been getting leaks and little tidbits of information that we're trying desperately to put together in our True Detective Matthew McConaughey storage space with our post-it notes and our, you know, our map with the yarn stretched across with the pushpins. And we're all, you know, following
this. I'm not crazy. You're crazy. What?
Exactly. Well, is it maybe it's just me. Yeah, but I mean, I think we're going to be the ones who are also shocked by all of this too, in addition to people who haven't been following along at all. I think that's going to be the
I don't know that I'd be shocked at this point. I think that I would be impressed.
Yeah.
I'd be impressed that Mueller was able to put all of the pieces together as quickly as he was.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a better
but
way
I
to
don't,
put it.
I don't think there's any shock anymore because I do assume the worst. I think these people are as evil as they come. I think that there is no morality. There is an egocentric narcissism that worships money. And I think that it's as bad as you think it is and then some.
Yeah. Why is Michael Cohen in D.C. right now?
Allegedly meeting with the special counsel.
He's meeting with the special counsel. Oh, is this the special counsel or is it the grand jury?
I don't know. I think okay. The grand jury meets on Fridays, right? He was seen traveling to D.C. on Monday. Yeah. And the assumption was from sources and news outlets that he was having a conversation with the special counsel. Michael Cohen's tricky because he's just as unreliable and just as much as a dishonest person. I mean, if you work for Donald Trump for that long, your morality's in question.
Yeah.
I think the key, and I came back to this the other day, I was having a conversation with somebody, and I said, we haven't heard anything in recent times about the McClatchy article that Mueller has proof that Cohen went to Prague. And I keep coming back to that because there wasn't any follow-up on it, but there wasn't anything to say that it wasn't true either. And I don't ever believe that McClatchy would put its reputation on the line for something that it didn't believe to be entirely true.
Yeah.
I don't doubt that Mueller has proof that Cohen went to Prague. I think Cohen is spelling that out. He's working a deal. And I think that if he did go to Prague, then that would give us everything we needed to know about how involved Donald Trump personally was with these sorts of payoffs. I mean, look, we know because the idea was that Cohen went to Prague to pay off hackers.
Yeah.
And we already know that Trump was intimately involved with paying off people he slept with. So this is not something he's unfamiliar with.
Mm-hmm.
And Cohen's the guy he taps to handle these sorts of things. And I think that that's another component of this that will come out. And I think it's a matter now of, you know, what Cohen's willing to give and what kind of deal he's going to cut in order to save himself the rest of his life in prison.
Yeah, you know, I think we're going to find out that there was a second passport. Because remember, he posted his passport on Twitter saying, hey, look, it's my passport. It doesn't say anything about being in Prague. And then we're going to find out, I think, when all of this comes to a head, I think we're going to find out that Michael Cohen has had multiple passports. And which,
yeah, it's either multiple passports or it's travel on a private flight through the EU. And you don't have to get stamped when you go from country to country.
Oh, yeah, that's so right. That too.
Yeah. So it's a private plane where he landed somewhere where he didn't have to get... he didn't have to get stamped to actually enter and exit Prague. I just don't think these are the kinds of details that materialize out of thin air. So I don't think it was commercial. I think either, if for some reason he entered into the EU on some kind of commercial flight, that yeah, you're right, there's a second passport, or he went on a private plane and he went through another EU country where there didn't have to be any record of him entering Prague or leaving Prague.
You know, meanwhile, Trump is submitting written answers to Mueller. In fact, he's taking
a couple
more days. That was what I was going to ask you. I mean, it just, how
oh,
can these,
God.
How can these
I mean,
deeply...
It might as well be a coloring book.
Exactly. I mean, these answers have got to be completely lawyered by Trump's team. And then I don't imagine Mueller could take any of that seriously. I mean, it's
I don't
even,
think Mueller cares.
Yeah.
I think this is appeasing him. I think if Mueller needed legitimate answers on this stuff, that he would force the president to sit for an interview.
Yeah.
I don't think he needs the president at this point. I think he's got all the information he needs about Russian collusion. Mueller's not dumb. And I keep coming back to that. It's like, he's not going to let the president get away with this nonsense.
Yeah.
If if he really needed a face-to-face. He doesn't need the president to perjure himself. He's already got it.
Right, right.
And so it'll be interesting to see what they put in writing. But I think he already knows what the president's stance is. And then just having that baloney in writing is going to be helpful to him.
Oh,
I
yeah.
think if he needed the president in order to get an obstruction charge or a perjury charge or in order to nail him on conspiracy, then he would demand that he sit for an interview. I think Mueller's so far ahead of the president that this is just a way to appease him or maybe even soften him up
yeah.
so that he turns around and says, okay, this is insufficient. We now need to have you sit for an interview, and here's we're going to issue a subpoena.
Yeah.
But I don't believe for one second that Mueller is conceding on anything or that there's anything that he's going to find out from these stupid written answers that are going to mean anything.
Yeah, it just seems to me as if this is about checking off a box on a list. You know what I mean? Where he's just going down, okay, we need to get Trump on the record saying something here just yeah. so we have a thorough report. And he's already got Trump where he needs Trump to be. He's
yeah.
already, you know, he's already basically convicted Trump based on all the other evidence that they have, and just Trump's responses will just fill in some blanks, maybe if, and they don't even really need to. He just needs to be able
or
to.
Or he knows that Trump's legally advised position is already counter to the evidence.
Yeah.
Right?
That's
I mean, he knows. I have to assume he knows that whatever Trump's coming forth with is going to contradict all of the evidence he has. So whether he says it in person or he says it in writing, it's not going to be the truth. And he already knows that. So he's like, fine, you guys want to lawyer up and lie in a document? Lie in a document. I'll have it in writing.
Right.
I think he's got to believe that because there's nothing the president's going to say. We know the president's a proven liar. Mm-hmm. We know that. We know Rudy Giuliani's a proven liar.
Yep.
We know that Jay Sekulow doesn't tell the truth. So you've got president and his lawyer sitting down and writing something up. Mueller's going to take it and wipe his nose with it. I mean, it doesn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and he may trap them into lying on paper.
Yeah. Well, you know,
which is even better.
Right. And, you know, just it seems like it was years ago, but it was actually only 4 days ago. Just staggering the way
what?
The news cycles go now. But 4 days ago,
like
yeah, we just found out it was a small blurb. I think the Daily Beast originally reported it. Apparently, the fertilizer king, Dmitry Ribolovlev,
yes,
that's the best I can do on his last name, was detained in Monaco. What is this? Do you think this has anything to do with Russia, or is this a separate matter?
It's a separate matter. It's a separate corruption matter.
Mm.
But he's a curious figure because he's the guy that bought Trump's Palm Beach mansion for a ridiculous price.
Mm-hmm.
And on our site, I've got a profile up of him, and I highly encourage, it's under the Russians and Ukrainian sections, I highly encourage people to go to investigaterussia.org and read that profile because it gives you the background on this guy. Essentially, Trump bought a mansion, he put a coat of paint on it, jacked up the price, like doubled the price,
yeah.
tried to resell it, it sat on the market, and then this guy swoops in and buys this mansion for like 90, I think it was $95 million.
Yeah.
It's uninhabitable. It had a huge mold problem. He never moved into it. So he ended up breaking it up and selling off pieces of land. And I think so far he sold off two of the three parcels. But I mean, you buy a mold infested mansion, you never live in it, you break up the land and sell it in separate parcels. And you have to look and say, okay, there's some serious money laundering going
yeah.
on.
Yeah.
Like, how did the president turn such a significant profit on an uninhabitable property mm-hmm. that resold for an exorbitant amount of money and all he did was put a coat of paint on it? So you don't have to be a genius to figure out what was going on here. This guy's now been detained on corruption charges and questioned, and allegedly it has something to do with his lawyer. But regardless, I mean, these are the kinds of people that the president does business with.
Yeah, that's exactly
so
right.
I don't know that it has to do with the Mueller investigation, but it certainly gives some more ammunition to take a closer look at the dealings of this guy, the fertilizer king, and the relationship he has not only with Trump, but with other Russian entities who may have been using him to get money to Trump.
And also, while we're talking about our long list of Russians, what's going on with Mueller and Konstantin Kalimnik, Manafort's man in Kiev, Kostya Kalimnik is, I guess, his nickname. What's going on? There was some news that came out recently about him, too, an increased focus by Mueller on that guy.
Yeah, he's taking a look at him and his relationships. I mean, this is somebody who is now living in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
He's been indicted. He's not going to be extradited to the United States. But he's heavily connected to Gates. He's connected to Manafort.
Yeah.
He's basically Manafort's Ukrainian protege.
Right.
And his role, he's also connected to Deripaska.
Deripaska, yeah.
Deripaska. And there's some question as to how he came. You know, he talked about at one point that he'd been to the United States to visit with Manafort in person. And now there's some discussion that perhaps he flew on Deripaska's plane to take that trip.
Wow.
So they're taking a look at that connection. And they've got enough people who are intertwined with him, including Sam Patton, who is a business partner of Kalimnik's. Patton pleaded guilty. Gates has pleaded guilty. Manafort's pleaded guilty. So Kalimnik's a missing piece in all of this, and only missing because he's abroad. But the special counsel certainly has plenty of information about him, and they're just taking a look at is he the connector to Putin and Deripaska.
Yeah.
Is he the guy? Because we know that he's the one that Manafort spoke to during the campaign and said, is Deripaska seeing my press? Do they know what we're doing? How do we use this to get whole? How do we use this to fulfill our debt to Deripaska? So they have to take a close look at Kalimnik and say, where is he connected in all of this? How many tentacles involve him? And so that's obviously, look, we hear bits and pieces of what Mueller is doing, but none of this we hear from Mueller himself because the special counsel's office doesn't talk. So we hear it through people who are being questioned before the grand jury, or we hear about it through sources who want to remain anonymous who are on the other side of this. But we're not hearing it from the special counsel's office specifically. And again, none of it's new. I went back, Kalimnik's a good one. The article that came out recently about Mueller taking a renewed interest in Kalimnik, I just kind of searched for it within our site. And I found the old articles about the Deripaska plane and the questions as to whether or not that's how Kalimnik made it to the United States. So
wow.
I think that these are stories that are getting, or these are, this is information that's getting recycled into the narrative as we get closer to trying to figure out what went on. But we know who the players are. We know how involved they are. We just need the final roadmap that Mueller's going to provide us to show us how everything's connected.
What's going on with Mike Flynn? What's the latest with him? Have they gone to sentencing yet on Flynn?
Not yet. It's coming up. They have not gone to sentencing yet. I got to look up the date on that. It's coming soon.
Yeah, but he's...
Cohen and Flynn and Manafort. Manafort's got a hearing coming up, like a status hearing.
Yeah.
I don't know where Gates is in the process, but there's some stuff at the end of this month and then December. I want to say December 12th is a big date. I have to look at the dates. But yeah, Flynn's sentencing is coming up. So.
Looking at this from 30,000 feet, it would seem so obvious that between Manafort, Gates, Flynn, and Michael Cohen, just those four guys alone, that Trump is utterly screwed. How is there any possibility whatsoever that he could somehow escape either? I'm not really even looking at the prospect of an indictment, though I think that would be wonderful. Just in terms of the Mueller report, it just seems like Trump is guilty of sin, and it's these four guys who would provide everything Mueller needs along those lines to nab Trump, whether it's documents, signatures, emails, text messages, just their own testimony and their own description of meetings and phone calls. It seemed to me as if it's almost inescapable for Trump, don't you think?
Well, it has to be. They've got all the information they need. It's the same thing. Of course, he says he got caught in a perjury trap. And it's dude, it's not a perjury trap. If they've got all the evidence and you lie to them, it's just perjury.
Yeah.
And so if they've got all the documentation, all of the emails, all of the text messages, all of the phone records, you got everything. You got all the guys he's talking to. I don't see where, if the president's implicated in any of this, that they don't have it already.
Yeah.
And I don't believe in any of this. There is no collusion. You would have seen it already. I think Mueller builds the case. He makes it an airtight case. Then he goes public with it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any reason for him to leak any of the elements of this until he's absolutely ready. He doesn't have to, and he shouldn't. So to say that there's no conspiracy, they would have said it if there were already, I don't believe that for a hot minute.
Yeah.
And I think that people need to just kind of slow the roll and wait for the Mueller report to come out.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the scary thing is the opportunity that Whitaker might have to bury that report.
Oh, Jesus.
And so we need to figure out a way to make sure that that sees the light of day.
Yep.
And that's where the House is going to come into play, mm-hmm. to figure out how to do an end run around whatever effort Republicans or now the Trump-controlled Department of Justice does to try to bury the Mueller report.
Yeah. You know, as much as I would like to see Don Jr. Be indicted by Mueller, the thing is that... If Jerome Corsi and Roger Stone go to federal prison for a long, long time, that is going to be like the most radical chemotherapy to the American political discourse that you could possibly imagine. These two guys are a cancer on the discourse. I mean, Corsi has been working for years. He was responsible for the swift voting of John Kerry. He also mm-hmm. mainstreamed the birther movement against Barack Obama. And now he's ass deep in this shit, clearly has perjured himself. And the same with Roger Stone. These two guys are villains, and it'll be such a relief to see them go down. And I hope it's for a long, long time.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be such a terrible side product of all of this to get yeah. rid of some of the conspiracy theorists who like to spread terrible information and add that to the discourse. So if that's a byproduct or a side result of all of this, yeah. then, you know, God bless, because... That would be awesome.
Yeah.
You know, we could bring some civility back to the conversation. I like that people like to make fun of the fact that, you know, Sarah Sanders put out this video that was obviously doctored by InfoWars. But the fact that the White House is willing to put out that information gets us closer and closer to there being a total blur
yeah.
between what's real and what's fake. Mm-hmm. And I fear that. Because as much as the rest of us laugh and say, how could you possibly believe this? There's 30-35% of the population that's still on the Trump train that absolutely believes it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And we can't stop that until we get some decency and some parameters back in place that say, you know, you're being fooled.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, speaking of that fake video that Sarah Sanders put out, you used to work at CNN. You know, I just noticed today that Fox News is joining CNN in that lawsuit against the White House. What ran through your head when you watched that ridiculous and awkward confrontation with Jim Acosta?
I mean, look, I know Jim Acosta. I worked with him briefly at CNN. Mm-hmm. He's a good guy. He's always been a really nice guy. I hate the fact that they call him a showboat. I don't understand where standing up and asking questions and follow-up questions makes you a showboat.
Yeah, I know.
That's his job. Mm-hmm. It drives me insane. He's not doing anything other than asking a question and then trying to follow up on that question and holding onto the microphone and trying to ask questions of somebody who is being defensive and trying to avoid answering real questions just makes you a good journalist.
Yeah.
I it was absurd. And from what I understand and kind of the gossip behind the scenes that I've heard and from various sources is that the president intentionally was going to try to make a scene. And, you know, that this is what he does, right? His intention is to try to create drama, to try to create, he thinks it's all a reality show. He doesn't understand that he's the president of the United States and that this is a real job. I think he truly believes that this is all just for show and that was part of his circus.
Yeah.
And it's a shame. And I'm glad that other networks are standing up and saying this is absurd. You know, he attacks reporters who ask him questions he doesn't want to answer, and the reporters who ask him questions he can't answer, he dodges. So they should all be asking follow-up questions.
Yeah.
You know, there was a reporter who asked him a really good question and said, look, you say that you want to protect people with pre-existing conditions, but you brag about getting rid of the individual mandate, which is the one element of the Affordable Care Act that allowed insurance companies to protect people with pre-existing conditions financially. That was part of the deal.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to him, how can you reconcile those two things? And he totally avoided the question. Now, right. The next reporter should have followed up and said, can you please explain how you do that? Mm-hmm. And the reporter after that, he doesn't know the difference.
No.
He has no idea that the individual mandate is the thing that allowed insurance companies to protect people with pre-existing conditions. I saw Chris Hayes put up on Twitter not too long ago, you know, he doesn't even know the difference between Medicare and Medicaid, and that's true.
That's
he
true.
Also proved he doesn't know the difference between health insurance and life insurance.
Yep.
So, you know, you're talking about somebody who doesn't have the fundamentals of the policy that he claims he wants to implement or that he's going to protect people with pre-existing conditions. He has no way of doing that. It's a total lie, and the people who believe him are getting scammed again.
Yeah. Which is partly why the White House staff has allotted policy time for the president now. And it was funny this morning on the...
Is that different from executive time?
Yes. I would much
rather...
Are
we just renaming reading magazines on the toilet? What are we, what are we doing here?
I would honest to God rather...
And Highlights magazine. I'm not talking about like an actual magazine.
Highlights, yes. You know, I was thinking... I would much rather him be playing golf and tweeting.
I mean, don't you see him in like a little elementary school desk and a blackboard and like, okay, policy.
Exactly.
They're playing conjunction junction videos.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, one last thing I want to ask you about, Jackie, before I let you go here. You know, I was just looking at the list of the InvestigateRussia.org advisory board. You got Max Boot. You got James Clapper. There's General Michael Hayden, Jay Johnson, Mike Morrell, Norm Ornstein, Leon Panetta, Rob Reiner, Charlie Sykes, Clint Watts. And the thing I keep thinking about, and I've written about this a few times, and I feel like I'm way out on a limb with this. So if you disagree, fine. If you're in agreement with me, great. But I keep talking about this idea of putting together a coalition of normals, of never Trump Republicans and the left getting together to fix all of the damage from the Trump years. And this isn't necessarily an issue-based thing, but it's more of a process-based thing. Like, let's reform the presidency so there's not another Donald Trump that's going to rise up using toxic populism and so on, nationalism, to appeal to a large audience. What do you think of that idea? I'm just trying to get a sense of how much or how little we need to continue to embrace never Trump moderate conservatives and all of this.
I'm down. I mean, the reason why we put this board together when we launched the site was because we wanted to approach this whole thing from a national security angle.
Yeah.
We didn't want it to be liberal or conservative.
Mm-hmm.
The idea for it came from Rob and his wife, and they realized that this was really important. And so when we talked about who we were going to ask to be on the board, we wanted to make sure that we had a good number of conservatives and a good number of national security experts, Russia experts, and cyber experts, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because we just wanted to make sure, I mean, we added so many conservatives that people accused us of being a neocon site at one point when we first launched. Hey, you want to go to war with Russia? It's like, no. We just wanted to make sure that this wasn't launched as like, oh, this is just liberals going after Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And when we asked these national security experts to join, they did so wholeheartedly because this is a severe national security issue.
Yeah.
It's the same reason, I love to watch Nicole Wallace and Steve Schmidt and, mm-hmm. Rick Wilson, all of these people, even Michael Steele, right? All of these people who know what danger this president's doing to the country. I'm happy to work with them. I mean, we may have serious policy differences based on the ideology behind, who we are in policy respects. But the politics can go by the wayside. I think that we need to have a legitimate conversation. I think that the coalition of normals is great, right? The coalition of reasonable thinking people. We can come up with some acronym of this.
Yeah, a better acronym than CON. I need to think of something better than that.
Right? Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think that the idea behind what we were doing was, hey, it's important, pay attention. The people who know it's important are telling you it's important. And I thoroughly agree that we can bring together, all of these people. We'll get some moderate Republicans will make a stand again.
Mm-hmm.
Right now they don't have the power over the party because the people who are controlling the party are on the Trump train.
Oh, so yeah.
We need to figure out how to co-opt those people, not to make them progressive Democrats because they fundamentally don't have the same agreement on policy, but that's okay. Let's just all agree on what it should be like how government should work, and the government can still work for the people.
Mm-hmm.
That it doesn't have to be an I get mine. I'm confident that a lot of these new lawmakers, these new freshmen members of Congress, are coming from a breed of people who genuinely want to serve.
Yeah.
And that they're not yet jaded by the process of wanting to maintain their seat, right? Because there's this whole fundraising cycle that happens where people don't legislate anymore. They just try to raise money to stay in power. So I'm hopeful that this younger generation or this new incoming class believes in doing right by the people of their districts. I'm hopeful that that will trickle up to the Senate and that perhaps we'll get somebody in the presidency will hearken us back to an age of wanting to do right by the country.
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, you know what? By the way, I forgot to mention Evelyn Farkas as one of the members of the advisory
wonderful.
Board.
Wonderful. Yeah. And we always joke because she's like, I'm the only woman. And it's not for any reason other than we just wanted the best of the best. And you know, when we were putting it together, those were the names that came to us. Mm-hmm. And there are plenty of women who work in the foreign policy space who are fantastic. And so I will apologize now if anybody gets offended or upset by that. I am a female and I run the site, so there's that. And I have a research assistant who also is female. So we got some girl power behind the scenes, but Evelyn and I talk all the time about how, you know, we need more female representation.
Yeah.
It just so happens that the people that joined the board happen to be predominantly male, but we'll forgive them for that.
And you know what? There's also I said that the Coalition of Normals is more of a structural process thing, but there's also an issue benefit here, I think. And the example that I've been citing for the last couple of days is the fact that, you know, there was a recent debate. It was a Monk debate on C-SPAN between David Frum and Steve Bannon. And I noticed something interesting. I don't want to say this too loud because I don't want to spook them away. But it was surprising to see David Frum pushing the process of ameliorating man-made climate crisis, where David Frum was accepting the reality of man-made climate crisis and the need to fix it before it's too late. He was talking about how the Republican Party is disenfranchising African Americans and other minorities through voter purges. He was talking about health care. David Frum defended George Soros in that debate.
Wow.
And so, you know, in this process of forming this cooperative effort to take down Trump and to fix all of the damage by Donald Trump, it seems like we're also going to be able to win, or Democrats are going to be able to win over a lot of these never Trumpers on some policy areas too, where there is more overlap than is acknowledged usually in the process of the discourse. So there is a positive benefit on the issue side. So Jackie, thank you again for taking an hour plus
pleasure.
Here.
Sure.
I mean, I really appreciate your time and especially your time working on investigaterussia.org.
Thanks. I mean, the favor I have to ask of people who are listening to this is twofold, right? One, to visit the site and to sign up for the daily briefing.
Yeah.
There's no spam. I'm not selling your email to anybody. It's just at the end of the day, you get an email, which is a compilation of the most important stories that have to do with the Russia investigation.
Yeah.
And it's a good way for us to keep people in the loop as to what's going on. Some of it's going to be stories you've heard elsewhere. Some of it's going to be stuff that came out that you're like, oh, I missed that. But it's easy to read. It's not uber complicated. It's just important to keep people in the loop. And so that I highly recommend. And then if you're interested in kind of my daily snark, you can follow me on at Jackie Schechner on Twitter. That's where the good stuff is.
Very good.
I don't always do Russia. There's a whole bunch of other stuff in there. So.
Sure, sure. Well, thank you again, Jackie. And maybe one of these days we'll have you back on and we'll talk about on the interview show. We'll talk about healthcare because I know. That's
oh
one
yeah,
of the other
I can do that too. I got a nurse's hat I can put on too.
Thank you so much, Jackie. Take care.
My pleasure.
Bye bye.